My name's Holly Amanade.
Hi, Holly.
Oh my God. Oh, wow. Thanks so much for asking me, Ali. I will feel grateful once it's done. Right now, I just feel really nervous and just hoping that I can do what I've generally learnt to do in recovery, which is just forget about myself, but that might take me a little while, so bear with me. Yeah, 40 minutes is a long time. No, you don't reckon? I do. I sometimes share for about 4 minutes. I'm like sick of the sound of my voice by the end of it, and so hopefully I'm in a bit more of a self-loving place today. Yeah, I guess I haven't really thought too much about what I'm going to say because I've generally learned that when I don't plan things, they tend to come from a place that's closer to my heart, really. So it makes this kind of moment of the chair all the more terrifying because I haven't got a clue what I'm about to tell you all, but I'm just trying to remember what I've learned about NA, that this is a safe place, and that's something I try and create for other people, is just a safe place that NA's taught me to have. And yeah, I guess, yeah, I feel like I've been in recovery for a few years. I'm gonna be 8 in April, and that really amazes me. But I was thinking about it today, like every time that I attempt to tell my story or sort of share my experience, it changes because I've changed so much in NA from working the steps and just from doing so much healing. So the way I look at my life and I understand my experience is just completely altered from how it would be me doing a chair in like my first year. Something about we sort of just change the way we see the world from changing from within, and the world is a very different place for me now. So I was thinking, I wonder how it would feel to try and tell my story how it used to feel when I first came through the door, because I think that's the most important message that we can carry to people who are first in the door. I think we all need a message of hope on a good day even, but the most important thing is people in this room are those that don't really know anything about NA and are just kind of coming to know what recovery is, and that can be quite a frightening place. So I'm going to stop mumbling and just speak. I've learned so much about myself in recovery, and I feel as though when I first came in, I really feel as though I was just like this kind of really stuck, overwhelmed ball of messy feelings, and I just wouldn't have a clue how to kind of communicate any of them to you. I'd just quietly just be sort of shaking and just trying to kind of hide them as much as possible, and I've sort of learned the more I'm able to just really sort of own those and be whatever I am, the more I can kind of just relax and be with other people. And I'm going to try and tell my story a little bit. I think that's a good place to start. I sometimes wonder if there's many people that can relate to the kind of circumstances of my using. I know that lots of people can relate to the kind of emotional impact, but I'm a little bit stuck. I'm just going to invite God in this moment and just find some peace, but yeah. I had a phone call today from someone in NA, and it really made me realise that thing of a lot of the things that I've lived through, I wonder whether I've lived through them just so that I can share something of my experience for other people. And she rang me in a complete kind of stuck place of just not being able to kind of speak freely about how she felt, and I ended up sharing some of my experience with her. And I remember sort of growing up, and that's always a good place to start because it's the beginning, but I remember sort of growing up and just feeling completely kind of baffled by what was going on around me, and just feeling just like, I think from a very young age, I just took a step back from reality. I just thought, this is madness, and I'm just going to take a little step back. And I sort of stepped a foot out of my body and just observed the world as I experienced it then. And I was sort of laughing about it the other day. It's so good to be able to kind of laugh about things. But my mum was just, like, really quite outrageous and radical. And we used to, like, go on these mad little marches when I was a kid. Just, like, stop all the traffic in these massive kind of trucks with big sound systems and just be dancing in the street. And I never really understood the causes of things. It was just felt really quite scary and free at the same time, and we'd just be sort of let loose with bare feet, just running wild. And I was sort of remembering different sort of things that happened in my life that really sort of paved the way for how I sort of approached life from then on. And there was a time when me and my friends, who were quite young, we were going to go and plant this sort of flower bed in the local park. We must have been about 7 or 8. And we decided to go to Home Base to nick some seeds because we didn't have any money. So we thought we're going to go and nick some seeds to make a little kind of paradise garden in the local park. So we went to Home Base to nick the seeds and came back and started planting this paradise park. And she disappeared. And when I got home, my mum had she told my mum that we'd stolen these seeds. And my heart sank. I thought, that's it, it's over. I am in so much trouble. And I just thought I was going to have to, like, march back to Home Base and, like, give these seeds back and do this, like, mini confession. But my mum turned around and said she wasn't fuming that we'd stolen anything. She sent us out to go and beat up the girl for grassing. And that was, like, the way that kind of things got sort of spun around, and the way I began to sort of view the world was that this kind of fierce loyalty to my friends. And like, police car pulled up outside the house one time, and it was broad daylight, they were visiting neighbours or something, and she sent us out, we were kids, she sent us out with whipped cream to just go and write on the police car, just like vandalise this police car. So obviously, I've got a bit of a story to tell about my relationship with, you know, the society and the police in particular. But just thinking about those things and really sort of admiring my mum now, I feel like I'm in a very different place. Like, I really admire some of the things that she tried to teach me, even though I can see that they're not particularly, I can choose whether I choose to take them on or not, that she was a very strong, powerful woman. And when I first came into recovery, I didn't see her for 18 months. And I was very young. I got clean at 21. And I was just in so much pain that I had so much to kind of heal around. I was sort of bordering on obsessional about that relationship because I hadn't come to terms with the fact that she wasn't able to kind of be the mother that I imagined that I really did need, actually. And I don't know, that's just something that's been such a massive thing in recovery, being able to heal. And it was the conversation that I had earlier that when people used to approach me in early recovery and say, I've had really troubled relationships with my family and they have healed, I used to think, what the hell do you know? You have not lived with the mother or the father or that I've lived with. And I just thought that they would never, ever be able to kind of understand the experiences that I'd had. But I am one of those people now that says my relationships with my family have changed. And I was nearly sort of in tears thinking about it on the train on the way here, actually, that my mum and I just had this kind of really aggressive, kind of competitive sort of relationship. And I remember one day, I called my sponsor about it at the time, and she knocked at my door one day, and she just had this rose in her hand, and she just went, this is for you. And I could have cried an ocean about this particular thing, because it was just such a clear example of the love of recovery just, like, flowing into my life. That a woman who just... We just couldn't show affection for each other at all. That it was just an affectionless sort of childhood. And, I couldn't remember ever being held or... And just that one symbol of her kind of extending a rose... It's like NA taught me to hug, and I go into my family, and my family know I'm going to hug them. And they're not even threatened by that anymore. NA taught me to hug, and I've taught my family to hug. And that is just absolutely priceless, because we sort of all sat there struggling, really loving each other, but just having no kind of... We'd never been taught how to express that, just never been taught how... to kind of just verbalise that and be okay with it. It's like just kind of chaos and very high-pitched shouting was more familiar. But I think about... I was a really good girl for a very long time, and that was kind of like my defence against... That was my way of sort of getting affirmation in my family and stuff, that I was always the good girl. It's right, Holly's the good girl, she'll be fine. You know, I got a little bit of attention from that, and just recognition, and it just felt really good that I was always the one that went to sleep on time and I'd wake up on time and get ready and go to school on time, and just really wanted to be a really good girl. And and I didn't learn any of this until I came to NA, but what I realise now is that I wasn't being myself. I just didn't feel safe being myself at all. And I had no idea what was going on for me sort of on a deeper level, and I certainly didn't have an environment where it's safe to kind of express that, really. And around age 13, I started showing signs of quite extreme rebellion, that I just feel as though something sort of snapped inside me, and I just couldn't manage pretending to be good anymore. I just couldn't manage what was going on inside of me. And I was thinking about it recently. My memory's awful, I have to say, but... I have remembered, since kind of working through the most pressing, kind of painful stuff in recovery, I've been able to remember a whole lot more. And I remember I went to an all-girls school to begin with, and I remember, like, there was this, like, crowd of lads that used to hang outside the school, and I was just instantly drawn to anyone who just looked like trouble. And so I started hanging around with this kind of group of lads, and they were all graffiti artists, they were all writers. And they'd start putting me up in just a little Tippex pen on the window. And this was like just the beginnings of me getting involved in a world that was just going to take me over and just become my life. And I remembered I got kicked out of that school. And ended up going to a very small school. Probably, I really do think it's probably the coolest school in the whole country. It was 10 pupils in the whole school, and we just hung out, played pool. They taught us how to kind of, you know, make music and just sort of just try and be a bit more creative in how to kind of connect with people, because I really struggled with that. People began to really scare me, and then And I remember while I was at that school, so I was 14 at that age, I was already drinking Super Tennent's in the morning. I just started from the kind of very lowest place that you could possibly go. I just thought, what's the point in fucking drinking something that's just like 5% if you can have something that, you know, just the makings of an addict, just clearly, you know, present from the onset. And I was desperately just looking for a family, so desperately just looking for a family that I could just, like, slot in with. And my mum had gone to jail by then, and I was in care, and I just got to the point where I just thought, do you know what? Nobody can tell me what to do. It's, like, beyond a place where anybody can really contain the rage that I feel towards the world right now. And you know, just like that sad reality of feeling like you've actually made it somewhere when, you know, you just get in one of the kind of top crews in London, but you're like chilling at someone's house, playing computer games, just like away from the world, locked out from the world, just like, just amongst like-minded people that just do not want to engage with the world at all. And just sort of, I don't know, just this image of me sat there, like, sipping Martell, listening to Method Man, just thinking, this is just fucking it, you know, like, the late 90s, planning what tube we're going to go and paint, and just, like, doing all the little outlines, just becoming so obsessed. I was just obsessive with everything that I ever did, and, you know, like, doing graffiti takes a lot of planning because you have to get through, like, double yard fence. You have to time what time the security guards come round, and you have to know how you're going to get onto the track sides. And the adrenaline, let me tell you, it was hard to kind of find a peaceful place when I came into recovery because I was used to so much adrenaline and, you know, just, like, ducking from... my life would be at risk daily. And that excited me. And the kind of more risky it felt, the better. Because, mainly because inside I just felt really fucking terrified. Sorry, I am going to swear. I can't help it. And I just felt so scared inside. So my persona was that I'm just going to make out I'm fearless. And I'm just going to project to the world that I am utterly fearless and that I can handle anything. And anyone who knows me in recovery knows I'm really quite vulnerable. I sort of generally sit in meetings quite nervous. I would have been nervous reading the traditions. I was seriously proud of you doing that. And here I am with a bloody microphone. But anyway, so... I wanted to project to the world that I was utterly fearless, but as, like, a massive, massive compensation for how terrified I really, really was. And, you know, the unmanageability that comes with using just slowly, slowly took over, and I couldn't quite turn up in the same... My dependency on seeking oblivion became more important than anything else. Anything that was creative, anything that was directed towards being amongst people or finding a sense of belonging, or anything else that seemed to drive me prior to that, my mission for oblivion just outcoloured all of that, and that was just my sort of main focus from really quite a young age. And Just like, it's so hard to, such a beautiful thing to get to a place in recovery where I generally feel as though I have some sense of who I am and how I feel and some sense of it's going to be okay. And that statement just absolutely is the moment I'm in touch with my higher power. Everything is okay. It's going to be okay. That it's so hard to really get in that frame of mind of using where it just was not okay. Like, nothing was okay and everything was so frightening and just bleak, man. It was bleak. It's like, when I got sentenced to my first kind of, when I was heading into Holloway for the first time, I just thought, it was like I was just so resigned to the fact, this is just my life. This is just part of my life that I just come to accept that I'm going to end up in in prison sooner or later. You know, once I've done as many community service orders that I could, I'm going to... That is just what was due for me. And that idea of just having no hope or no ambition or no people around me, that's something I get in recovery. It's people inspire me, man. They seriously fucking inspire me. Sorry. And I just don't remember feeling that. If I did feel inspired, it was because he was a really good writer and he painted that many trains and he was in that crew. And it was like my aspirations were just completely warped. And my internet completely wasted and completely frustrated. It's amazing to kind of put that to use in recovery. And I think about it, right? I have done a few sentences. I've been to a few prisons, sometimes for a fair amount of time, and I met hundreds and hundreds of women, all of which, majority of which, I can safely say belong here, and I have not seen one of them. I've not seen a single girl that I know from Holloway or from Bulwater in these rooms. And I saw one girl that I did a sentence with in an H&I meeting, and she'd come into the meeting to nick the stereo. She hadn't come for the meeting. And that just makes me think, how lucky are we? How lucky am I to be just that one out of that how many hundreds? I don't know, someone might be clean somewhere in Kent and I just haven't come across them yet. But I just think, how lucky are we to be that few, that kind of tiny percentage that actually find NA and stick around. How am I doing for time? It's
22 minutes, you're done.
Oh, cool. I think another thing that I think about is the kind of the punishment that I sought and can seek being an addict and given my experience. And I feel like it's so important to say everyone's recovery is different, everyone's life experience is different, and my sponsors really taught me that each person just, we get well in different ways, and what works for me may not work for you. And something I've had to constantly remind myself of is that healing really takes time, and I say it slowly because it takes so much time and a lot of love. And you know, I just think about sort of on a physical level, I was thinking about how sad it is that we become so accustomed in NA to kind of just speak about some of the sort of just very kind of physical experiences that we have, that any time we actually harm our bodies in any small way, I just find that so sad, so, so deeply sad, and we're so used to it. We're so used to the idea that we've dragged our bodies through hell. And that's just physically, not emotionally. And it's almost like it can be said, oh yeah, and I nearly died. And I just think, well, but what about that time that you nearly died? Like, that's a serious kind of... I just find that so sad. And I think about the kind of trauma that I've been through physically, let alone emotionally, and like how blessed I feel in my life now that I just don't feel threatened in any way. Like my skull is safe. No, my heart is safe. And something about that's really moving right now. And I'm just going to think a little about when I first arrived in NA, and I was not using drugs for the first time in a long, long time, and NA just seemed far too good to be true. I was very suspicious of it, but also just like deeply, deeply relieved to have found a place that seemed as though it might be kind of safe, but I didn't really know what safety was before NA, and I don't think I really knew that NA was safe until a couple of years in, really. I was still sort of holding this sort of very paranoid, dark stance towards the world, and it took a lot of hugs and a lot of love to kind of convince me that you're all right, really. And I sometimes I just feel like such a cheesy little sentimental thing. I really wish I could just be much cooler than I am, and I'm just not really that cool. And whenever I try and make an effort to just kind of be one of the kind of cool kids, I just end up saying something really cheesy. And I'm beginning to come to accept that that's just my kind of approach to things, really. And it's just something about coming from so much kind of darkness, really, into a place where I really genuinely didn't believe I could ever find a place as free as what I found. And maybe if I describe in a little bit more detail about why that place feels free, I think about sort of in the moment, sort of where I am, this sort of phase in my recovery where I couldn't really communicate with people. I couldn't really relate to people. I was so, so ridden with shame in my using that if I got nervous just for 1 second, I'd just punch you. I just couldn't manage my feelings. That the only way I could cope with that is to be violent. I couldn't dance because I'd go out and I'd feel so much shame and so much self-obsession that I'd just kick off and get kicked out of the club. And that's not what happens now. They can't get me out of the club. Thank you, all of my friends, for dancing with me and bearing with me till the very end. So in today, just thinking about the way that the program works in my life, that I recently had a really moving kind of situation with a friend, and this is the steps in action for me, that I came from a place where I was thinking, what are you saying? I don't like what you're saying, and I feel really kind of paranoid about something. Where are you coming from? And I forget how much my past can still taint things, and I react far too quickly sometimes, and I don't let in a loving higher power. I just react from this place, like, what are you talking about, kind of thing. And this friend and I had a very open conversation where I completely was able to see, I have not seen this clearly. I have seen this through a lens that doesn't belong here with you, and I'm sorry that I reacted the way that I did. And then my friend responds and says, actually, I didn't really communicate very clearly to you what I meant, and I can see how you probably felt quite threatened by that, and I'm sorry. And we both end up in tears and just having a massive hug and just feeling so much kind of peace from a place that just felt really scary. And I just think, I didn't know how to have that kind of communication in my life. I certainly didn't have that humility. And I just didn't have that insight to understand what would be my part and how I could do something differently. I just did not know how to come from a place of love. And I often feel as though I am recovering from what felt like, I don't know if it was in reality, but what it felt like, which was my reality, it felt loveless. For some reason, I couldn't let in and I couldn't give out love. And I really, really feel like I am loving. I'm so loving in my life. I really make an effort to be, and I feel like I'm surrounded by people that are the same, and I'm not ashamed to say that. That is so cool. I would have been really ashamed to say that at some point. And I just think, you know, I came into NA, people come in desperate, thank you so much, come in desperate, really, really wanting to stop using, and I really, really wanted to stop using. I didn't know how the hell I was going to stop using. I also knew that I really had to change. I deeply, deeply, thoroughly had to change, because I could not function in this world with the resources that I had. And I got busy with the steps and found a very loving sponsor who has just continuously shocked me by how loving she is, really. I remember being really early days and like going out for coffee after the meeting and just sat there frozen, just thinking, oh my God, who are these people? Just so scared. But I would have told you I felt really free and probably really did. And so I feel like I came to NA really looking for a family. And this is one of the cheesy things that Holly says, I'm afraid. But I really was looking for a family, and sometimes I got really disappointed with that. But generally, in a lot of situations, no, I have. I found a family. And I've just got a very small, very close circle of friends surrounding me that are completely and utterly cheering me on. And I, in return, am completely available for them. And when I think about the sort of step 12 part of the process, what I could never ever do is get out of myself. I could never get beyond a place where I needed you to make me feel okay, because I really wasn't feeling it. And I just feel so kind of blessed to get to a place where I actually feel some days I can still feel very, very young and very, very lost. And it's that thing of at least we're not, it's a good thing we're not all mad on the same day, so we can just all sort of support each other. But I have days now where I feel like an adult and I feel contained and okay within, and even if they're fleeting, which they're not generally, I never ever imagined I could have that. The thing that is most precious about this is that I can turn up with my eyes wide open and my heart wide open and want to hear somebody, want to be there for somebody. And it's that thing of like, people gave me the opportunity through step work and through just being there for me to fully, fully express myself, fully of who I am and whatever's going on for me, whatever it is. And I feel like that is just what's released me. It's completely and utterly released me in my life to kind of, you know, just be okay with what I'm experiencing. And that sometimes takes a little process, but I generally do manage to get there. And to be that for other people, to be a safe place for other people, is such a privilege. It's such a privilege in NA to be a safe place for other people and genuinely know that you want to offer that. And that when you say, call me, you're going to answer and just be available, really. Oh my God, what have I talked about? I've travelled an awful lot in recovery. Spent the first few years really facing myself, and then I thought, I'm getting on a plane and I am going to see the world. And it was like that kind of quite strong energy in me that I had in my using sort of started to come back, and I'd start applying it to kind of more adventurous things that were a bit more creative and a bit more kind of loving and free. And I do that generally with dancing and hanging out with friends, having a laugh. But I did it a lot with travelling, and I remember going. I've told this story to a few people before, but there's a few I want to tell. I've only got 10 minutes left. Oh my God, 5 minutes, and I thought 4 minutes was going to be a nightmare. But when I was really, really lost in Bolivia, I was really, really lost. And I was with this little group of friends I'd met. I went to South America on my own, and I was just lost. I was like, altitude was like crushing my head. And I was desperate for a meeting, like utterly, utterly desperate for a meeting. I just thought, I'm going mental. I'm going so mental. I need a meeting. And Bolivia didn't have a website. I don't know if they do now. I just assumed there weren't many meetings in Bolivia. And I ended up having to tell the people I was travelling with, who weren't addicts, that I was an addict, because we we were on a little road trip and the guy was trying to force us to eat coca leaves. And I was like, I really can't. And he was like, no, you have to, it's compulsory. I was like, no, I really can't. So I had to, like, confess to the people that I was with that I couldn't, you know, that I was an addict in recovery. So anyway, this guy who I was travelling with, who was English but could speak fluent Spanish, thankfully, he came running down the road one day and he said, I've just seen a massive sign and it says Narcotics Anonymous in Spanish. And long story short, I couldn't get in the meeting, so I went back in tears just like, guys, I know I seem completely mental and you really don't understand this, but I really need a meeting. So this guy took me back up there and he managed to kind of speak to a few people, get in this building. And I sat down in this meeting just thinking, oh, thank God I'm in a meeting. And he was translating for me, and it transpired, this meeting that I felt I desperately needed, I was about 5-6 years clean, was like a brand new meeting in Bolivia, in La Paz. A brand new meeting, and in this meeting, people had travelled all the way from Argentina. One person had come all the way from Argentina to support this new meeting that's just starting in Bolivia. Someone had travelled from Chile, and another person had travelled from Peru, and there was just like three other Bolivian addicts sat in this room, just like, what's NA, kind of really trying to start a meeting. And I walk in there thinking, I really need a meeting. And this just random addict from London rocks up with a rucksack, just like, any time that I imagine I really sort of need to take something from a situation, I don't realise how much I'm giving it. And I think that's the beauty of meetings and what we do here, that I'm just not here to completely take. I take so much, but every one of us here gives, just by being here. We're giving a message of hope just by being here. And I've had really similar scenarios in lots of countries all over the world. And I collected my 4-year key ring in a meeting in Florence. I can't speak Italian. I wish I could, but I can't. And nobody in the room could speak English. And I didn't realise that they were all sort of just, like, I had the longest clean time there, and I was just, like, crying in the meeting because I hadn't spent a clean time birthday with all my friends in London. And at the end of the meeting, when they stood up to get their 30-day key ring, and I stood up to get my 4 years, and their mouths just dropped. It was like, oh, my God, you're 4 years? And I was like, yeah, and I am really happy in my life. I'm just having a moment, people. And it was just amazing. But I just also want to kind of give a bit of a mention for Eastern European countries as well. And there's a few people in this room that kind of do a lot of service, sort of reaching out to them. But I've had amazing experiences going to countries where it literally is their first ever meetings. And this is like a worldwide thing that I'm just so blessed. I'm one of those kind of thousands of girls that went through Holloway who just managed to somehow find a place in NA. And I'm sticking around, man. And I hope you all do too. I don't know. I'm going to leave it there. Thank you.